Hi, everyone. Steve Adubato. This is Lessons in Leadership. I'm joined by my colleague, Mary Gamba. Mary, we are thrilled to be joined by our good friend, Jose Lozano, who is Executive Vice President, Chief Growth Officer at Hackensack Meridian Health, a longtime underwriter of our programming on public broadcasting. And I also do some leadership coaching there as well. Good to see you, Jose.
Great to see you, Steve.
Mary, you know what I want to start with?
Oh, I hear you.
I did not grow up as a soccer fan. This is, by the way, we have new partners at New Jersey Transit. You noticed this ball, right, Jose? You know it?
I know it well. It's in my car right now.
So listen, someone might ask, wait a minute, Jose Lozano, it's with Hackensack Meridian Health. Why are you talking about the FIFA World Cup coming to the Meadowlands and also South Jersey as well? Explain to folks, Jose, the role that you have been playing, the key role to get the World Cup here with a group of terrific professionals committed to that effort, which was multi-year in the process.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It was a multi-year journey in order to get to showcase what New Jersey and the New York region can really bring and host these games. We did it several years back, in which when I was in the leadership role at Choose New Jersey, in combination with our counterparts in New York and the governor's office and the mayor's office and all of the major stakeholders in the area, we showcased on why we should be hosting it. And it was absolutely one of the most rewarding experiences to see that we were awarded it about a year or so ago. And we're about 100 and some odd days before we actually get to actually host it. What's really cool is now Hackensack Meridian Health is the hometown hospital for the host committee, and we'll be actually providing the medical services. So it's great to see it kind of circular.
Before Mary jumps in, talk to folks about the potential economic impact of the World Cup being here.
Yeah, we had estimated that the region itself will garner well over $1 billion of economic growth, from the local eateries to the hotels to the transportation. We're going to have millions of fans that will be entering the U.S. for the games. I mean, we have games all the way across the country, but you're going all the way from Massachusetts down into the New York area and down to the Philadelphia area. And so many of the fan base will be in the Northeast, and we're hoping that New Jersey ends up becoming their home as they travel to games.
And as before Mary jumps in, just log on to our website at steveadubato.org, because we're doing a whole range of programs leading up to the World Cup here and also after as well, trying to understand the economic impact, the cultural impact, in fact, the impact of soccer becoming more popular in the region as well. Go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, Jose, as somebody that is born and raised in New Jersey, I would have never in a million years that would have thought that something as big as the FIFA World Cup, this global phenomenon, would be coming here. Talk about the journey, right? I mean, as someone that lives here, seeing the advertisements, and by the time this airs, it's going to be full blown. But how many years in the making was it, and what leadership and partnerships needed to happen in order to bring such this huge main stage event to this region?
Yeah, so it started originally under the Chris Christie administration, was the initial pitch and expressing interest in cities that wanted to potentially host. And then the last 8 years under the Murphy administration, right in the smack middle of COVID, is when we started to actually negotiate what those could be and how and why we should be able to host it. And it was actually, again, it was a remarkable experience to have FIFA come into the New Jersey, New York area. We highlighted everything that we could actually bring. And, you know, we were smack in the middle of COVID. And there were moments wondering, will travel bans ever be lifted and what that world can look like by the time the 2026 games were actually started? And the one thing that we highlighted was, if no one was ever able to travel in New Jersey, there would be a fan base for any team that actually made the finals, just because of our thick diversity. And we found that every major community around the world is actually represented here in New Jersey. And I think that stuck with the FIFA folks.
Yeah, a follow-up to that, Jose. You and I talk about partnership, collaboration, and I'll tie it to the word trust. It is very difficult to trust others, different organizations with different agendas, sometimes competing with each other certain areas, to trust each other enough to partner together, to be vulnerable, and to realize that you are stronger, I'll get off my soapbox, stronger together than you can ever be alone. How the heck do you sell that as a leader?
It was challenging. There were moments where even we questioned, could we all put our guards down to actually highlight who we were as a region? And this was one of the first times that New York and New Jersey really teamed up together in one room in non-competition and saying, we need them as much as they needed us. And
Hold
so
on,
we.
Jose. Are you implying that New York and New Jersey compete on some level? I hadn't heard that.
Well, they're just a little urban portion outside of New Jersey is how we usually reflect them.
Ahead. New York, New Jersey, how the heck did you come together?
We came together in a really fascinating way. And given how much leadership changes have actually happened in New York, I mean, think about New York is up to their third governor and their third mayor in this entire journey that we have gone through this entire process. And every single one of them has been an absolute partner in ensuring that the games are actually a regional games. Now they're going to be hosted in New Jersey, but we do know that many of the fan festival, many of the activities, the hoteling will happen in New York, but there are going to be dozens and countless of activities that will actually be happening in New Jersey.
Before Mary jumps back in, I mentioned the soccer ball, New Jersey Transit, not to turn this into a commercial, but to disclose New Jersey Transit is a new underwriter of our programming. Logistics of moving people around, critically important, correct, Jose?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these games, many of the folks that are going to be coming into this region are not going to be self-driving. And so they're going to be utilizing and really relying on mass transit. And that is something that this region is by far the best in the country.
Mary, I know you love hockey first, but you're getting into soccer more. Final
I
question
am
for
getting,
Jose.
or do we have to call it football in if we're going
Oh,
with the true FIFA?
ooh, we should be calling it football. For the next 200
Thank
days, we
you.
really should be calling it football.
Okay. All right, go ahead,
See,
Mary. Football, European
football. So
style.
the appeal of football coming here, and as Steve mentioned, yes, New Jersey Transit is a new underwriter, and we're going to be talking a lot about the wayfinding, getting people here and there. But we're also going to be talking about kindness and courtesy. And in this region, let's face it, New Jersey, New York, we're not known for being, I was born and raised here, the kindest people in the world. What message do you have for all of our viewers watching today? I mean, for all of us, there's going to be more traffic, more people coming, whether you're going to the games or not. We are going to feel that impact. Talk a little bit about what that kindness and that courtesy should look like from all of us that are going to be receiving these gifts of having these wonderful people coming from other countries.
Yeah, I think number one, patience is key to all of this. There is going to be millions of folks into this community, into these areas in a season that normally does not attract that many folks. Number two, while we're going through some interesting times in our country, in this world with geopolitics, I think for the very first time in the Northeast, we have the ability to show that all are welcome. And original pitch, it's the irony of it at what it is today, our original pitch was welcome world. And I do think the New York and the New Jersey area needs to live by what we originally had pitched, is that the entire world is actually welcome in our backyards, and that we're absolutely looking, just like if you invite them to your home. This is our home, and we're opening it up, and we just need to be a little bit more patient.
Final point I want to make is we're going to be talking to the new Attorney General in the great state of New Jersey about the issue of human trafficking. And you may ask, what does that have to do with the World Cup? Well, when you have an event like this, and Jose knows it because he's been dealing with it and talking about it with his colleagues, human trafficking is an issue. It was with the Super Bowl when the Super Bowl was here. It will potentially be with the World Cup and a FIFA World Cup. And we're going to be talking to law enforcement professionals and others who are engaged, involved in making sure that human trafficking is not the problem it has been in the past. Now, by the way, am I right about that, Jose, or is that hyperbole?
No. You are spot on right. And actually, Hackensack Merritt Health is actually serving as a leader and as a guiding point to many healthcare organizations around the country via FIFA and the host committees. So our clinicians are putting a little bit of a playbook together for healthcare providers are the signs of what they can see for human trafficking. We actually will be hosting a symposium in the springtime just before the games, and we'll be providing materials all around the country to multiple host cities. And so our clinicians have been really leading the way in Hackensack Merritt Health, and it's an area we take absolutely serious.
Mary, let's make sure we get website information to put up in post-production in this as to where people can get information, also report what they see as relates to human trafficking. And one more disclosure, we're doing a series on vaccines, which is not directly related to the World Cup vaccines, what you need to know, which is being underwritten by Hackensack Meridian Health in cooperation with the New Jersey Department of Health. Jose, my friend Jose Lozano, Executive Vice President, Chief Growth Officer at HMH, Hackensack Meridian Health. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
You got it. We'll be right back after this. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the North Ward Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Lessons in Leadership is honored to be joined by Lori Tark, who is the Executive Director of the Joseph A. Unanue Latino Institute at our partners at Seton Hall University. Lori, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me on your show.
You got it. We have the website up right now. Tell everyone what the Institute is and why it's so important.
So the Joseph A. Unanue Latino Institute was founded in 2005 by the former CEO of Goya Foods, Joseph A. Unanue, and his wife, Carmen Ana Unanue. And we serve as a Latino center for all students who want to be immersed in understanding the impact of Latinos on America. And it's important because, again, understanding this demographic is, we're in every fiber of America right now. And by creating greater understanding, you become a greater educator, you become a greater healthcare professional, a greater business leader. And so we're here not only to serve the students of Seton Hall, but also the greater community and nation.
Real quick before Mary jumps in, but the Institute is for everyone.
Yes, we are Latino-centered, but we are not Latino exclusive. In other words, if you have a business and you want to understand the Latino community and how to impact the Latino community, you could come over here and learn that we are the fifth largest GDP in the world, the Latino, the American Latino, that we have are the most common age amongst Latinos in America is 17. The most, one of the biggest founders of small businesses today are Latinas. And so just like with those few examples, you already have a better idea of how you might want to target your product. And then if you're a healthcare professional, what are the culturally responsive things that you need to know? But also if you are a student who is Latino, Hispanic, or Iberian, coming to the Institute means that you also have people who really understand your experience on a deeper level. But again, we're here for all the students, and we definitely have students from every walk of life, Italian, Irish, Ethiopian, you know, they all come in to learn about our impact on America.
As Mary jumps in, the website for Seton Hall is up. Again, our higher ed partner. Go on the website to find out more, not just about the university, but the Institute as well. Go ahead, Mary.
Lori, you talk about the impact that the Institute is having on all students, but I was super interested to hear more about the scholarship opportunities and how that works, how they originated, and really what impact they're having and on what students. I would love to hear more about the scholarships.
So the scholarships are annual. They are open to all students of Seton Hall University. And what's beautiful about these scholarships is that, you know, along with other scholarships that are available on campus, you can actually add them on and compound the effect. And so, you require 3.0. And you have to be have financial necessity. You have to write an essay about your appreciation of Latino culture, and that's about it. We go through the essays, and based on those needs or on those criteria, we award the scholarship funds. Now, what is our impact? Our impact is very broad. I mean, if you look at the national average of graduation, it's 62%. Of a four-year college over 6 years. We recently looked at our data, and for the past five cohorts over the last 4 years, four out of those five cohorts graduated at 100%, and the final one graduated at 85%. So we're doing something right. And maybe it has to do with the mentorship. Like, we have a level of mentors that are called the Vanguards that are open to anyone. So that's awesome impact, like psychologically for our students. Because, for example, We have a student who his name is Alex, and he came forward and he said, "You know what? I'm dreaming about being a pilot." And I said, and he's like, "I don't have anybody on this campus that can guide me on how to do this." And I said, "No, you really do." And so, because one of the Vanguards is the first Latina Blackhawk of the National Guard, I was able to pair him up with that Smithsonian history maker of Latino American history. And she has become his mentor and is open to becoming the mentor for other students and also writing their letters of recommendation. And we have about a list of 20 other national history makers like that who are willing to lend their ear and advice to our students. In addition to that, we provide distinguished speakers to the entire community, authors. In February, we're having a healthcare conference that we're hosting. There's just so much that we do on campus for the broader community.
The so-called vanguards are mentors for these students. And when you
Yes.
use the term cohort, you're talking about the students who are students in the Unanue Institute, correct?
Yes, I'm sorry. The when I refer to cohorts, I'm referring to the scholarship recipients, because they have to engage. In order to keep that scholarship, they have to volunteer. They have to engage with the activities that we do on campus. And I think that engagement does have an impact on the graduation rates and how successful they are.
Last question from my perspective. How did you get into this field and why are you so passionate?
So this was one of those really great stories where it was a change of career, I was at another university, going through the thick of it, because it was a sandwich generation. And I saw this opportunity and I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to apply for it. I do have not-for-profit experience. I do have experience with the Latino community. So let me try. And on the heels of, my own health crisis, and another was the loss of my father. I literally said to myself, okay, I haven't heard back from Seton Hall. That's probably not going to happen. And I said, I need a sign that my father's still around in some way, shape, or form. And within a week, I got the phone call. Hi, Lori. This is Dean Jonathan Farina. We're so sorry it took us so long to get back to you, but we'd like to bring you in to do this interview to be the executive director of the Latino Institute. And I interviewed, and all of my pain, all of my love for my father, I poured into these students. And I remember, I'm the daughter of Cuban exiles. And so I remember the stories my father would tell me. And, I've largely lost a lot of my family by this point, because of you get to a certain point in life, right? And so I go upstairs to the institute, and all of a sudden I'm smelling the same Café Bustelo. I'm hearing the sounds of Spanish being spoken. I'm hearing the kids like telling me, and and it just felt like familia. And then what I loved was that I have like a student who's Italian and Irish telling me how he appreciates Latinidad. And then I have the student who's from Guatemala telling me, and Honduras and all this other stuff. And it was just such a beautiful thing to have, because we're an institute that,
Yeah.
quite frankly, fills you with hope.
By the way, Laura, Bustelo in the Italian American culture, it was there too, you know? I
Yes.
just want to, I want to clarify that.
Yeah, we're
It's,
both lovers of espresso, believe me. And if you ever want a cafecito, you're more than welcome to come to the Latino Institute.
no weak coffee here. Hey, Lori Tark, who is an executive director, Joseph A. Unanue Latino Institute at Seton Hall University, to Matt Borowick and all of our friends and partners at Seton Hall University. We thank you for your partnership and your friendship and introducing us to great people like Lori and the Institute, like the Joseph A. Unanue Latino Institute at the University. Thanks so much, Lori. All the best.
Abrazos. Adios.
Well done. We'll be right back. Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. Mary, before we do this seminar on executive communication leadership, go on our website. There's, I don't know, how many, a dozen, Mary, At many
least. And
seminars?
I went on there and just, I'm very proud of us, I have to say, in terms of leadership communication. If you are looking for tips, tools, whether it's leading meetings, how to handle artificial intelligence, having difficult conversations, the importance of relationship building, go to our website that's going to come up on screen right here, stand-deliver.com. Click on mini seminars, and you can check out all of our short. I promise they're short, quick, fun, and you'll learn something.
Also, one of my favorites is on emotional intelligence and leadership. It's there as well. Mary, by the way, new book for the Leadership Library, a new book, Daniel Goleman's new book, Emotional Intelligence, Why It Can Matter More Than IQ. Daniel Goleman coined the phrase emotional intelligence. We talk about it a lot. This is one of his newer books. It is part of our Leadership Library. I got a bunch of new books for our Leadership Library. Check out our website as well for not just the library of our, I think, our, is there our 10 best, Mary?
It's more than that. I've even stopped doing 10 best. I just switch it out, so I like to keep people guessing. But there's about a dozen or so up there at any time, and I try to switch them out
I
regularly.
just keep repeating top 10 like I'm the old David Letterman, but it's not 10, it's more than that.
Yeah.
Okay, but they're great leadership books. And the other thing is, on our website, as Mary just said, dozen plus mini video seminars that Mary and I have done together on a bunch of leadership and communication topics. This one, executive communication leadership. Mary, what's the first bullet point that Sylvester will put up in post-production?
It's probably the most important, and I am using the qualifier probably, strategic messaging. And I say that I believe it's one of the most important when it comes to executive communication and leadership. You can't be a great leader. You cannot be a great communicator, an efficient, effective communicator and leader if you aren't strategic in your messaging. You first need to know what your message is before you try to communicate to others.
You ever go into a meeting or a class if you're a student or any conversation and you just start talking? You don't know really what your point is. Neither does the other person. The problem with that is it's talking, but it's not really communicating. Sounds coming out, but you're not connecting. Very simply, strategic messaging means you think through, what is my point? How do I want to communicate it? And you need to think that through before you actually have words coming out of your mouth. Sounds a wild concept, huh? What's the second bullet point, Mary?
Confidence under pressure.
Hold on one second. How the heck, under pressure, you're trying to bring in enough money to pay the bills and pay everyone every 2 weeks, the pension contribution, the healthcare payments, keeping the company going and our media production company, right? Or this production as well. It's pressure, Mary.
It sure
How am I
is.
supposed to be confident if I don't know what the outcome's going to be? If I don't know that the money's coming in, how can I be confident when I'm so unsure sometimes?
We are talking executive communication and leadership. The key word there is executive. Could you imagine being the executive of an organization, a team, whether it's a team of 10 or a team of 100, and not being confident under pressure? Your team is looking to you. No, you don't need to tell them everything's going to be great. It's okay to be vulnerable, but you do need to be confident in what you're saying, in, again, going back to that first bullet, the messaging, and make sure that you are being confident in your decision making. You may not be making the right decision, right? At the end of the day, it may not actually succeed, but in that moment, you need to be confident in yourself, your decisions, and how you're leading that organization forward.
Let me just say this before we move to the next bullet. It's confident, not that you have the right answer. It's confident that you've considered a series of options and you're making the best decision possible with the information you have. And if it doesn't turn out well, you are confident that you'll learn from whatever goes wrong and move forward. That's the kind of confidence we're talking about. What's the third bullet point, which is very much connected to this?
I'm taking a breath before this next one. Calm, presence, and credibility. Calm, you need to make sure that you do take that deep breath. If you're scattered, if you're running around like a chicken with its head cut off, I've seen it, it's not attractive. You need to calm
Yeah.
yourself, you need to breathe, and with that, you also need to be credible.
Mary, you know what that says?
I can't see it because I'm blind. I'm over 50.
Says breathe. What? Like what? Steve, what do you need? This little stone that says breathe here? Yeah. Because we all have different things we use in the other one. Just Mary knows this one says gratitude. You can't see it, but we'll show it in post-production. Here's the thing. The easiest thing in the world is to get panicked, freaked out. It manifests itself in unhealthy ways and communicating in ways that are anything but executive leadership. And I've done it. I did it as recently a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't thinking through what I was saying. I was peeved about something that happened. I just start picking up the phone, being peeved at staff members. And all it did was create unnecessary angst. Fair description, Mary?
Very fair.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for agreeing so quickly. So if I had just breathe, just breathe, think it through. How serious is the situation? What's the best way to deal with this? Can it wait till tomorrow? None of those. I didn't think of any of those things. There was no executive communication leadership going on. It was visceral, reactionary, and unproductive. Next bullet, Mary.
Audience focused. When we are looking at being a very strong executive communicator and executive leader, the first thing that you should always ask yourself, one of the first things you should ask yourself is who is my audience? Is it one? Is it the entire team? What do they care about? If you don't tap into who your audience is, you're communicating for yourself rather than communicating for them.
First rule of communication, always, who's my audience, as Mary said. And people say, well, I'm just talking to Mary. Well, Mary's one. We have 8 full-time team members. They're all different. They're a different audience. And if I'm speaking to a group of lawyers and doing a leadership seminar, it's not the same as a group of physicians, which is not the same as a group of folks who are in another industry. They're different. Communicate to that audience. That's what executive communication is. Mary, the last one, why is this phone a problem when it comes to active, present listening mode, being in active, present listening mode? Go ahead.
You could not be present if you're constantly being distracted by the alerts that come up on your phone, and it will take you out of your zone. It'll take you out of your area of focus. And more importantly, whoever your audience is going to see that you are distracted and that you are truly not listening. I love the old expression, you have 2 ears for a reason and only 1 mouth. Stop talking, start listening, but that's not enough. You don't want to just hear the other person. You don't want to just hear the words that are coming out of that person's mouth. You want to truly listen so you can understand the meaning in those words.
Last point I want to make about this. The kind of listening we're talking about is a decision. You make a decision that it's worth listening, that you have an opportunity to learn, that you want to communicate to the other person that you care. That's what executive communication leadership is about, is intentionality. That's the word I want you to think about. The word for the day, executive communication, leadership, and intentionality. For Steve Adubato, that's me, Mary Gamba, Lessons in Leadership. We'll see you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, NJ Transit, the North Ward Center, O'Toole Scrivo, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Delta Dental of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, inspiring great minds to greater purpose since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At Delta Dental, we do more to make benefits easy to implement, use, and understand. It's why businesses large and small trust us to keep their employees smiling. Year after year, we make our clients and members happy with unmatched expertise and great dental benefits. We apply our decades of experience to give you more guidance, providing plan design options and cost-saving measures. With reliable support for you and your employees, we make administration effortless and free up your time so you can focus on other business needs. We even do more for vision care with Delta Vision. Choose Delta Dental and discover what the power of more can do for your business and your employees.